Second Samuel 12. I don't know. I think it's pretty familiar to everybody. But we talked last week about how David had stayed home and committed adultery and then had her husband killed. In chapter 12, verse 1, the Lord sent Nathan to David. He came unto him and said unto him, there were two men in one city, one rich, the other poor. The rich man had exceeding many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing save one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished up. It grew together with him and with his children. It did eat of his own meat, drank of his own cup, lay in his bosom, and was unto him as a daughter. There came a traveler to the rich man. He spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd to dress for the wayfaring man that was come to him. But he took the poor man's lamb and dressed it for the man that was come to him. And David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. And he said to Nathan, as the Lord liveth, the man that hath done this thing shall surely die. And he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he had no pity. So this parable that Nathan tells isolates the two men, right? Two men. And what was the problem? The problem was that the one man had no respect for the other man. He only thought about himself. He spared to take of his own flock. I mean, he wouldn't even noticed it. It would not have impacted him at all. But for the other man, it was everything he had. You know, it wasn't like that lamb was born in his home. He bought that lamb. He didn't have others. He didn't have a mama lamb somewhere so he could have more. Where the rich man had many. And, you know, lambing season, he would get more. And there was a traveler. Something visited. What visited? Temptation. Right? Temptation. Well, in the story was a wayfaring man, a stranger, just a friend. But in David's life, at the heart of the matter, sin had visited him. Temptation visited him. We talked last week about, you know, what was it that caused him to be home when he should have been at battle? And somebody said laziness, right? He just figured, well, you know, I don't really need to go. Yeah, I can rest if I want to. And so it had visited him. And, you know, we all have visitors in our lives, don't we? That visitation of procrastination, the visitation of temptation, the visitation of laziness, the visitation of depression, right? Of stress. All these things come and they visit in our lives. But, you know, we cannot allow them to take up residence in our lives. It's one thing if we, you know, if we're grieving or we're depressed or we're stressed for a brief period of time, but as that goes on, it gets more and more detrimental. And it begins to define us the longer it exists with us. The longer it's there, it begins to define us. You know, we talk about visitors. If somebody just passes you on the street and stops and has a conversation with you, you might not think much about it. But if you move them in your house, we start to think maybe y'all are pretty close. And that's how sin and temptation and all those things we talked about, you know, it's one thing if you just have a moment. But it's another thing if it becomes your character. traveling, a traveler. And his anger was such that he said that, oh, he said, that man must die. That was his first stop, but he wasn't finished yet. Before he dies, we're going to take his lamb. We're going to pay back that other guy four times because he did it and because he had no pity. And David's furious. What does that tell us? He had no idea what was coming. I mean, he figures, you know, the newspaper says he's rescued this widow lady that was pregnant. Boy, he got away with it. Man. Exactly right. And he could see the sin of the other fella, but he's not expecting any kind of judgment at all. Like, he figures he got away with it. Y'all ever feel guilty? What you been doing? But when we've been doing something wrong, you know, it's one thing if you're driving. I was explaining to the kids, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, we were driving somewhere, and they said, how come that person just hit their brakes? I said, well, or slowed down. I said, well, when you're driving, if you're used to driving too fast and then you see a police car, you automatically slow down. I said, but if you once you get in that habit of slowing down, you know, because you see a police car, then it just, you know, why? Why do we do that? Well, guilty conscience. And so when you see the FBI standing at the front door, you know, if you've done something wrong, you figure, uh-oh. If you hadn't done anything wrong, you're like, well, we'll see what this is all about. And so when Nathan shows up to David's house, if David had felt guilty about what he had done, he would have been a little more cautious. He would have been expecting. Like, you ever come to church with a guilty conscience and whatever the preacher says, you say, he was talking to me. Somebody told him what I did. And people have accused me. Like, I've had people say, oh, my wife must have told you. I said, look, she didn't stop right there. She didn't tell me anything.
I think sometimes we're guilty over things we don't do.
That's true. And I think most of the time that's where we are, is where our guilt lies on what we should be doing and we're not, more so than what we're doing that we shouldn't be. Right. Right. Because we come in guilty. We come in expecting them to hammer us. And if David had been expecting the hammer when Nathan showed up, as this story was being told, he would have said, okay, I'm the rich man. Uriah is the poor man. Bathsheba's the lamb. And the visitation, the traveler was the temptation and the lust. And he would have figured it out as he went along. He wasn't on the same page. So he figured he got away with it. He wasn't worried about it. And, you know, here's the thing, though, is we go to church sometimes and we're so comfortable in our lives that we hear the preacher talk and we go, well, he's talking about her. Oh, he's talking about him, you know. Right. I wish my son was here to hear that message. Right. That's what I hear at the door. It's not a bad statement. I wish everybody would hear it. But the truth is, what did we get out of it? What was in it for me? How was God trying to speak to me? Well, David never considered that God was speaking to him. Right? Sometimes that's what we do. We come to church. We just figure, oh, he's talking about everybody else. And that's when you get the biggest amens, when you talk about everybody else. If we start getting on by sin, it's whole me. Right? But you preach on everybody else. Amen. Yeah. Keep them distracted so they won't get on your sin. That's right. And so what happens in verse 7? Nathan said to David, thou art the man. It's you. I know there's a whole bunch left to this chapter, but that's the statement, isn't it? David, you're looking at other people. You're pointing out other people's crimes, other people's sins, other people's wrongdoing. But this story was specially designed to define what you've done. And you don't even, like, it never even occurred to you that maybe you did something wrong. Yeah. Yeah, you forgot that God would talk to the preacher. Thus saith the Lord God, still in verse 7, I anointed thee king over Israel. I delivered thee out of the hand of Saul. I gave thee thy master's house and thy master's wives into thy bosom, and gave thee the house of Israel and of Judah. But I love this part right here. And if that had been too little, I would moreover have given unto thee such and such things. God says, David, if that wasn't enough, all you had to do is ask. You didn't have to go steal your neighbor's wife. If everything I have given you was not enough. And think about what he said. Number one, the anointing, that indwelling of God's presence. I've given you Saul's house. I gave you the kingdom. I gave you Israel and Judah. It's all yours. Man, this is like a revival of Israel, and you're at the front. And if that had not been enough, I would moreover have given to thee such and such things. So what was the problem? The problem was and is that sometimes we get so comfortable with where we are that we let down our guard and we become complacent until our desires are misaligned with God. So that we want things that God doesn't want in our lives. So that we want things that God knows will destroy us. And yet, that's what we want. And so would God have given him that? No, but if he had lined up his wants and his desires to do whatever God wants him to do, he would have been satisfied. You know, he could have been out there on the top of his house that night looking over Israel and saw, oh my. Let me go get, hey, y'all need to go down there two doors down. Tell that lady we could see that. You need to let her know. He didn't do that, did he? Guys, when the temptation is not in control of our lives, we can see that and it doesn't bother us. It doesn't get at us. You know, somebody who has a problem with alcohol, they drive by the liquor store or drive by the bar, they might have trouble with it. Somebody who's licked that problem, they can drive right by there, no problem. But if you're still in a position where you've got a weakness, then driving by there, whatever there is, I wouldn't encourage it. Until you get to a point where you can drive by and it doesn't bother you anymore. A lot of things, it takes some time to build up resistance or to build up some strength. And if David had been right with God, he could have looked away. But he wasn't. His heart was already gone. He was already complacent on God's things and focused on the wrong things. Verse number 9, wherefore hast thou despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? Thou hast killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword, and hast taken his wife to be thy wife, and hast slain him with the sword of the children of Ammon. So not only did you kill him, not only did you take his wife, but you used somebody else, you involve them in your crime. Verse 10, now therefore the sword shall never depart from thine house. because thou hast despised me and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife. Now, here's the thing. Tell me David's reputation. Who is David? What's the phrase? Man after God's own heart. He's the best Christian in the whole country. Boy, you talk about somebody who loves the Lord, look at King David. But now what? I mean, you know he stole his neighbor's wife, right? I mean, you know he committed adultery, had the man killed so he could take his wife, right? That's what happens. And instead of people honoring God, say, oh, look at what the Lord has done with that. Old David used to be an old short fella running around chasing sheep, and the Lord took him out of there and made him a king. Look at what God can do. Well, you know, see, he despised the Lord. He didn't consider God's reputation. Somebody asked me something the other day, and I said, if it doesn't happen on Paw Patrol, I don't even know it goes on in the world. But after hearing it, I looked some stuff up, and then I caught the news one or two days this week. And I look at these people who are supposed, they're out front saying, hey, look at me, and you ought to be doing this, and you're, you know, such a sinner because of what you do, while they're doing terrible things. And what makes us, look, none of us is perfect. None of us. But when you're going to be out front leading the charge for the family values, it might do you well to consider it at home yourself. Because what happens, they look at what you're doing, they go, well, there's nothing, that was just all a facade because they don't really believe it. Look at what they're doing. Despised the Lord. Verse 11, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house. Can you think of anything else more heartbreaking? That those who will betray you will be those under your own roof. I will take thy wives before thine eyes and give them to thy neighbor. And he shall lie with thy wives in the sight of this son. In other words, openly. It won't be a secret. You think you've done got away with this in secret? Don't count on it. He said, I'm going to make it apparent to everybody. For thou didst it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun. Again, openly. Verse 13. David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said to David, the Lord also put away thy sin. Thou shalt not die. Right? David's judgment toward that fellow, that imaginary fellow, was, oh, he's got to die. Nathan said, okay, you're not going to die, but you're going to pay. Verse number 14, howbeit, because by this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also that is born to thee shall surely die. And with that news, Nathan walked out the door. Verse 15, Nathan departed to his house, and the Lord struck the child Uriah's wife bare to David, and it was very sick. So how long's it been? Right? We went from, oops, I'm pregnant, to, you know, how long was that? Now, I don't remember them having pregnancy tests back then. Well, it doesn't say with a period of time. So as I'm saying, it probably could have been a few months, right? At least 2 months, maybe. And then, oops, I'm pregnant. And then, you know, David orchestrates this whole thing with Uriah, and he's dead. He goes, oh, come and stay with me, right? So now we're about 6 months? Well, the battle, you know, probably was already finished in that time. If you figure it within 3 or 4 months, that was it, because it would have been getting into winter and they wouldn't be doing the battles then. And so, you know, now we're a year, right? Now we got a baby. I mean, because we read it, so, you know, this chapter, that chapter, that chapter, in half an hour, we know the whole story.
Many months. I know, I could tell. Barry went dead, I guess. So he's given great occasion to the enemies to blaspheme God. That's the accusation. And so he says the child's going to die. So here we are, you know, a few months down the road or a year down the road, and the child is going to die, he says. So David, in verse number 16, David therefore besought God for the child. He prayed. Not only did he pray, he fasted. And he lay upon all night upon the earth. I mean, he's face down in the dirt, sackcloth and ashes, really praying about it. I wonder how many of us pray that way anymore, when something's really burdening us.
Really putting it before God. I don't know about you. It seems like there's always something to pray that way over. Something. Verse 17, the elders of his house arose and went to him, and they went to raise him up from the earth, but he would not, neither did he eat bread with them. It came to pass on the seventh day, the child died. The servants of David feared to tell him that the child was dead, because they said, "Behold, while the child was yet alive, we spake to him, and he would not hearken to our voice. How will he vex himself when we tell him the child is dead?" Man, he's already distraught. This is going to push him over the edge. But when David saw that his servants whispered, David perceived the child was dead. Therefore David said to his servants, "Is the child dead?" They said, "He is dead." David arose from the earth, washed and anointed himself, changed his apparel, and came into the house of the Lord and worshiped. Which is quite remarkable. Because so many times people blame God and get mad at God. You know, look at what you've done. You've taken my child. And I've often said this is, you know, of all the ways that God has taught me in my life to relate to others and to empathize with what they're going through, this is the greatest won't say fear necessarily, but this is the one I say to the Lord, don't ever help me to understand that, to lose a child. Help me to love people and sympathize with them, but not to actually have to know what they've gone through. And David got up and worshiped the Lord. David, I mean, they figured this is going to push him over the edge. He got up. And he worshiped God. He praised God. He served God. He came to his own house. And when he required, they set bread before him, and he did eat. I mean, he hadn't eaten in a week. Verse 21, and it made an impression. See, people are watching us. They see what we do. There are people who know that you left your house this morning, and based on the time and maybe the way you were dressed, if they saw you, know that you have gone to church. They expect that's where you've gone. They're watching. I'm not saying they're not stalking you, but they're aware. They see what we're doing. They see, you know, our habits. They hear you hollering at your husband or your wife, right? They hear the battle going on, the battle raging. They hear that stuff. Intense fellowship, yes, brother. People can, they're aware of what's going on in our lives. And not that they're taking notes and not that they're really keeping track, they're just aware. And they saw what David did. David got up. He said, child dead, child's dead. He got up, went and cleaned himself up, had a meal. They're like, what just happened here? And so they confronted him. They asked him, verse number 21, what thing is this thou hast done? Thou didst fast and weep for the child while it was alive. But when the child was dead, thou didst rise and eat bread. And he said, while the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who can tell whether God will be gracious to me, that the child may live? But now he's dead. Wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. He said, there's no point stressing over something I cannot control or praying for something that is, you know, beyond possibilities. But while the child was alive, I held out all hope. I kept praying. I showed God that I really meant it. But once the answer was clear, I moved on. Verse 24, and David comforted Bathsheba, his wife. And he went in to her and lay with her as she bare a son and called his name Solomon, and the Lord loved him. And he sent by the hand of Nathan the prophet and called his name Jedidiah because of the Lord, beloved of the Lord. So, what we see in this chapter with David, of course, we saw his sin in the last chapter, but then in this chapter, we see how he figured he got away with it. And he didn't apply the parable, the preaching, to his life. He just said, get that guy. And Nathan said, you're that guy. So when we get in a position where we think we're above accountability, we're in trouble. And he had placed himself above accountability. He didn't go to battle. He had people that do that. And then, of course, he just figured he could do whatever. They said, oh, you know, that's somebody's daughter and somebody's wife. Remember? That was the answer. That's somebody's daughter. That's somebody's wife. He said, get her. He had put himself in this place where he could do whatever he wanted to do. But God was watching. And that's what we need to be mindful of. God is watching. Not only is God watching, everybody else is watching too. Again, it's not that they're trying to keep track of us. They're just aware. They just see our patterns. They know our habits. They hear our language. It's not that they're following us. They're just aware. We're not doing this in secret. So people know our faith. They know if we're really living what we say we believe or not. Comments, questions? That was his name. That was just a... So the word Jedidiah means beloved of the Lord. So what the Solomon, in other words, if you read what it says there, look at what it says in verse 24, the last part. She called his name Solomon. The Lord loved him. The Lord loved him is Jedidiah. That's the term, Jedidiah. So it was an affectionate or a pet name, if you will. So they called him Jedidiah. We all know him as Solomon, right? But they called him Jedidiah, which means you're beloved of the Lord. But it also is so rich because you look at, you know, her first child with David dying. But then God is showing them now with Solomon, hey, I didn't quit on you. I didn't quit. Just because, you know, you had to answer and there had to be accountability, that doesn't mean I gave up on you. And that's so important with God because, let's face it, we fall short. But God insists that we understand he didn't quit on us. He didn't give up on us. All right? Good question. Anybody else? Go ahead. Right. Well, and you think about it, what are the, if we were to classify it, I know we say, oh, there's, you know, they're all the same, but we don't, none of us really believe that. If we were to classify the two worst commandments to break, right, what would they be? Adultery and murder. I don't know. Can you think of anything worse than that? Right. So, those are two pretty big ones. They're pretty heavy. I mean, we say, you know, honor the Sabbath to keep it holy, but, you know, we don't, well, okay. Right? Honor your father and your mother, and you should, but, you know. But when you kill somebody, you can't take that back. And when you commit adultery, I mean, that's a big one. David did it. And that's a great point. You know, God didn't just throw him out. Gave him grace, allowed him back.
I think it's so important too to read the Bible because there's not anything in there. If you read the Bible, there's always somebody you can identify with. And I always identify with David because he was a musician and I love music. But then, you know, Luke was a physician. And just there's characters in the Bible that you can identify with and know you're not alone, that people have been through that.
It is important, you know, God used fallible people because if he had used perfect people, we wouldn't be able to relate to it. You know, but he used people who fell short and sinned and committed crimes and, you know, I mean, this is bad. But God wasn't done with them just because he messed up. He messed up big, but God wasn't done with him. All right? Let's take a break.